In the garage of Dr. Frank Conrad, on November 2nd, 1920, the first scheduled pre-advertised radio program in the United States went on the air. Station KDKA was broadcasting returns of the presidential race on the evening of Election Day. From a humble beginning in a Pittsburgh garage to the sumptuous studios of the national radio networks in New York, Chicago, and Hollywood, these are the years we refer to as the golden age of radio.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing in your time.
Al Kemp on the air for Griffin.
It's time to shine your shoes anywhere.
Tony Home Permanent presents...
This is Dick Bertel, and with me is the man with 2,000 hours of old-time radio programs on tape, Ed Corcoran.
Hi, Dick. It's nice to be here again with you.
Well, our show is originating, recorded tonight, from Shelton, Connecticut. Why specifically Shelton?
Well, Dick, we have a very famous radio personality who is perhaps better known for her music than her voice, who appeared on many, many shows, including this one.
That theme song is familiar. What was the name of the show, first of all?
That was Mert and Marge, Dick, one of the early soap operas.
And, of course, our guest tonight is well-known organist Rosa Rio. Rosa, turn around to this microphone and say hello to us, won't you please?
Hello, in my old southern voice.
I thought I detected a southern accent. Rosa, it really is a thrill to be able to share this microphone with you, because you have been associated with just about every top radio program in the business. Your music was the introduction to, such shows as The Shadow and Cavalcade of America and so many, many more. And we're going to hear some of those old theme songs a little later. But first of all, let's find out a bit about how a young Southern gal got started in radio in New York City.
Well, that's very simple. One had to eat.
I guess that's
and
a good start.
And I happened to come up from New Orleans at the time of the Depression. And things were very, very, very bad everywhere, I guess. And, of course, the organ had taken a back seat. And fortunately, what we call the plug-in organs began to come into the radio for background music. And so someone said that there was a vacancy at NBC, and I timidly went down and auditioned, and I must add, they gave me a very strict audition. I had to play everything, had to play things at sight, things that they were sure that I didn't know, and they quizzed me very carefully, and after doing so, they said it would only be 1 week's work as a substitute.
It managed to expand into a bit more than that, though, didn't it?
They told me they would let me know if I stayed, and 23 years passed, and they never did tell me.
23 years.
Well, it looks as though you did become permanent after a while. Well, now, your background was such that you were able to improvise easily. Now, what specifically was that background?
Well, the background was from cueing pictures, mm-hmm. and that was very important to be able to improvise. And that is in cueing music for the situation. And where in the picture you had a long picture, well, it could be an hour and 20 minutes or hour and 30 minutes, and you cued the picture. In radio, it had to be limited to express the same idea in 2, 4, or 7 seconds at the most. And so to be able to do that, you had to do a lot of quick thinking. But the background experience of the theater made quite a difference when I went into radio.
Now, when you say that you had to do a lot of quick thinking, this must mean that you were improvising then.
Definitely,
to fit the
because
mood.
If you look at any good music, classical music, that it takes at least 4 to 8 bars to express the theme. And believe me, they don't have that time. It's too costly. You have to express the idea in a limited amount of seconds. Now, at the time that you may have your dress rehearsal, they may have allowed you 7 seconds, only to get on the radio and on the air, as we speak of, and they're frantic because some actor or actress began to emote, you see, and took up the time, and suddenly they start either cutting their throat like this to you or throwing up 2 fingers or 4 fingers. So a thing that you might have planned for 7 seconds ended up in 4 seconds.
And conversely, I'm sure you had to fill many times, too, when somebody lost the last page of a script.
That is quite true. And you got this sort of a thing, the finger went round and round like a clock, and keep on and keep on, and you better keep on.
Just make some kind of noise, right?
Something. Keep it moving. I don't think silence was ever appreciated.
No, it wasn't. And, of course, you were able to do so many things with the organ specifically. I suppose it was a very versatile instrument for radio.
Well, the electric organ was very versatile. In this way that it could be musical one time and then could actually be terrifying another time. And that was very important in creating the mood.
Let's get back to that first week at NBC. What sorts of shows were you filling in for?
Well, we had so many shows. We had commercials and the soap operas. We had many musical programs, which they don't have today. Many singers were on the program, and you had to be able to accompany them. And that was another thing that required much more than the average person listening. Say the singer came in that morning and said, I have a cold. Could you transpose down a third? I just can't reach the high E. I can only take about a C. So you had to be able to quickly transpose and go down into another key. And so those things were very important. And half the time they brought in music that they had just a lead line, and the harmonies may not be in it. So you had to be very quickly in a limited time, because generally 1 hour you had. Mm-hmm. And out of the hour was the 15 minutes you were on the air. That left you 45 minutes, in which had to be rehearsal time and dress. And you really had to go fast. Then we had poetry programs, and then we had our mystery programs. And then we had to keep a certain public relations things, you see, and had to do different things because of the FCC. So those were things that generally were not done by professional people, and I think they were the hardest to follow.
Well, you know, Ed, you're the authority in radio, and Rosa has been associated with so many wonderful programs over the years. Perhaps you might be specific as to which shows.
Well, as Rosa was saying before we went on the air, Dick, that she was a regular organist on many, many shows, but in addition, she substituted on just about every show. For example, she was a regular organist on Mert and Marge, on The Shadow, My True Story, When a Girl Marries, but she did substitute on shows like Inner Sanctum and along those lines. Maybe we ought to hear a few of these, Dick. I think you mentioned the change of mood. Why don't we try something here, doing The Shadow. In fact, maybe could we do it like they did it in the old days? Would you read the opening lines, Dick? and Rosa will accompany you, and we'll see how the organ really makes the voice sound even better.
All right. I guess I'll have to be the shadow, too, because we only have one actor. Well, do you have a copy of this, Rosa?
Yes, if I can read, I have the copy.
All right. Let's try the shadow. I guess you're first. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows. Once again, your neighborhood blue coal dealer brings you the thrilling adventures of The Shadow, the hard and relentless fight of one man against the forces of evil. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. The The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Several years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, The Lady in Black. Oh, that's fun. Now I know what it's like to introduce a program
how
like
do you
The Shadow.
Without breaking up, though.
That's great fun. And, of course, it was very serious at the time. This, of course, was a live program, and there was no spoofing at the time that it was on the air.
No, it was great on both sides because the characters themselves put so much of their own self into it to portray this, and then it still left so much to the imagination of the listener that we don't have today. That was one of the reasons, you know, why we never had guests in the studio for our radio programs. You see, we never had any guest, ever. Because anyone listening to a soap opera, as we said, or a drama, some would like to say, would at home have their own impression of what the person looked like, you see. Mm-hmm. And that they had that person already fixed what they heard, and they would come in and be spoiled. Because to come in and see, I'll give you a good example, Kevin McCarthy was McCarthy. He's just great actor. And you know, he was a young man then, probably 28 or 30, and he would take the part of a 89-year-old man, and he would bend over, and he would do this impersonation of a very old man. A person would come in, and they would be horrified. And then we had a wonderful, Madeline was just the most wonderful baby imitator, and she was a very large woman and a young grandmother. And she would do all the little, at birth, the baby born, or for 6 months or 2 years, and she always brought her little pillow. And they put her head in the pillow, and she was the best baby crier you ever heard.
And so she needed the pillow.
Oh, definitely. Never without the pillow. You see, anyone would just have been so disillusioned had they come into our studio.
Yeah.
But at home, they could have these wonderful imaginations and going around and around their head of the different characters, and they became real people to them.
We're visiting the Shelton, Connecticut home of Rosa Rio tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio. And, Ed, suppose we find out a bit about Rosa's career, especially with regard to the soap operas. I know the ladies will all remember those with very pleasant memories.
Well, even I remember them, Dick, with pleasant memories as well.
Did you listen to Stella Dallas?
Yes. I was a traveling salesman at the time, and many times I'd listen to these things in the afternoon, and I wouldn't make as many calls as I was supposed to because I got so wrapped up in them. So, I was kind of glad to see them go from that respect.
You know, I'm glad to hear you say that because, you know, a lot of men sort of goof off. They want to think that women were the ones that listened to that, and every now and then they will say, oh, I listened to it. So I'm so glad. It wasn't just for women.
No, it wasn't.
No,
well,
I'm
backstage
glad to
wife,
know that you enjoyed
Mary Noble,
it.
And of course, the couple next door, Peg Lynch, was our guest
yes.
not too long ago, and
yeah.
that was a very enjoyable
mm-hmm.
show in the afternoon. And
mm-hmm.
it wasn't, I would say it was geared to a general audience rather
yes.
than just
right.
the housewives, because
right.
the situations involved both sexes. It wasn't just
right.
the women, the men were there too. Well, could you tell us a little bit about your association with the Hummerts? They were certainly the biggest name in soap operas.
They definitely were. And to get in to see Mr. and Mrs. Hummert was just like getting in to see President Nixon. And it was very just by chance, and I think a lot of people always have some one or two lucky streaks that happen to them. One day I was doing a big show in NBC in the largest studio, and Mrs. Hummert happened to come in, and she heard me. And she said that if I left word, if I were interested to get in touch with her, they had a new show coming up. And I had already worn out the carpet at the Hummerts and never got anywhere trying to get there. And so she just happened to hear me one day, and that was my entree in. And I had a very nice and long association with them.
Yeah, were there many other girl organists in New York at the time when you were there?
No, there weren't. There weren't. I only know of two of us, that were matter of fact, that were doing soap operas.
And Rosa, your name is the one that comes up time and again. You receive credits at the end of the show.
Yes, I did. I was rather fortunate in that I was a staff organist. You see, generally the ones that did a soap opera, they only did one soap opera, and they were well paid for it, beautifully paid. But I worked for the staff. And it was a question of whether I wanted to make a little less money, but be sure that I had a long time with the paycheck, or just make a few big ones. So I stayed with the network. I got a little less money, but as the shows began to come in, I was asked for, and I always tried to do my best. That was very easy. I loved doing it. And so the show started 1, 2, 3, and I got up to 7 or 9 a day. I really worked hard, and enjoyed every moment of it.
Now, if you were required to do 7 or 9 shows a day, did that mean, first of all, you were moving from studio to studio?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It meant that on some of the shows, for instance, Ted Malone, Between the Bookends, also my show, which is called the Rosario Rhythms, I would go in and set up the show. Say, for instance, I was on the air at 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
And I had another show in another studio at 4:15 to 4:30. I would go in somewhere, say, 4 to 4 o'clock, and turn the organ on, set my combinations and everything right in for that studio at 4:30. Then I'd go back on and go on the air in 4:15 to 4:30 in another studio, and the ushers at NBC would hold the doors open, and while the announcer filled in that last 40 seconds, you know, for the network fill, in 40 or 45 seconds, I would run like mad to the next studio and slide in and get in on there, and just as the downbeat came in, with probably 1 or 2 seconds, I would start my theme.
You didn't have any roller skates at the time.
I didn't have any roller skates.
You mentioned the time 4:30, and a particular show comes to mind that I used to listen to at 4:30, Monday through Friday. Do you know what one I'm talking about by any chance? I'm putting you on the spot.
Now, which one?
Lorenzo Jones.
Oh, Lorenzo Jones. Well, that was one I had to run in for, too. You see, the thing of those shows, they did not pay you for rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Front Page Farrell, When a Girl Marries, Lorenzo Jones, and those were all the Hummett shows, and they did not pay you for rehearsals at all. They only paid you what we call airtime. So as long as I got there for airtime, I never had a rehearsal, never saw the script. The producer or director would mark the script up for me and put it on the organ. I never read the script before and run in there and play that theme, and as I went along, I improvised.
That's amazing.
No rehearsal, not
may
one
we,
of those.
May we hear one of those familiar theme songs? How about
Lorenzo Jones?
Yes.
You know, both of those are quite active people. Carl Svensson is in a lot of the TV shows, you see. And Lucille Wall is every day in a show, I think it's called something about hospitals out in California.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very active. And there's where that marvelous, if you want to call it apprenticeship, of radio work has been so important for those that have moved on to TV or moved on to the movies. And they're very active.
You know, I have a kind of a little hobby. Every time I watch some of these movies or TV plays, and as a radio actor, I can always pick him out by his voice. I always know the voice before I know who the personality is. And I saw Tora, Tora, Tora the other day, and I believe Bill Zucker was in it.
Of course. How well
part.
I know him,
and,
yes.
Also, several of them that were big in radio,
yes.
Now they're playing bit parts in movies.
Yes.
Well, tell us about Bill Zucker.
Well, Bill Zucker, if anybody saw the picture, there's a scene where they're flying over the Pearl Harbor, this is sometime in November of 41, looking at the defenses, and Bill Zucker is a brigadier general talking to another brigadier uh-huh. general and kind of sizing up the defenses. Uh-huh. And the voice was unmistakable, but I didn't recognize the face at all, but I knew that's who it was.
And Bill was associated with what shows, Rosa?
Well, with all the shows. Mm-hmm. He was in March of Time. Of course, that was the one they didn't use any organ on. But he was in March of Time, and he was on Mr. District Attorney, and In the Sanctum, and My True Story. He was a regular one on my show, My True Story. I would say that probably it wasn't a thing that he wasn't on.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
One of the aspects of your ability to play that we touched on earlier is something which I would like to expand on now, and that's your ability to create a mood right off the top of your head. Because you said you didn't see the script many times.
That's
right. And so you had to... What a stinger consist of? Now, usually a stinger would follow a dramatic statement, I would assume, by an actor.
Oh, yes. A stinger was very important.
Well, how about if I give you a line?
You're going to give us a line. All right.
John, I'm going to have a baby.
Well, that depends. It could be this, see? It could be this.
Depending, obviously, on the circumstances.
Right.
So how about you're lying in bed and suddenly, there's somebody coming up the stairs and you feel for your life. How would you background that kind of a situation? I'm scared.
Rosario, I lost more sleep over you and your music. Did you enjoy doing mystery shows?
I enjoyed all the shows.
Yeah.
I enjoyed all the shows. As a matter of fact, the busier they kept me, the happier I was. If I came into a studio and the director would say to me, "Well, Rosa, everything's all fixed for you here. You don't have much to do. Very little here and there. It's marked, not much to do." I died.
Mm-hmm.
I am liable to miss a cue because I had nothing to do. I did far better when I walked in the studio and the director would say, "Well, Rosa, now let's see. I'm sorry for you today because you're going to be real busy. Nearly every page here I got marked here, and I'm sorry, this is going to be a tough show for you." I was really happy. The more I had to do, the better I was.
Mm-hmm. We're visiting tonight with Rosario, and Ed, we don't have to listen to old-time tapes tonight in order to bring back memories, do we?
Yeah, Dick, you give me a night off here. I don't have to worry. And I thought I think I would enjoy it, and I'm sure you would too, if Rosa just played for a few minutes just some of the themes and some of the music she did on radio, and just whatever comes to your head. Rosa, why don't you play it for us?
A few of the themes? Well, you tell me if you recognize some of them, okay?
All right. I know the music, but I can't come up with a show.
I'd say it was Front Page Farrell.
You're so right. And Stats Cotsworth is in that show, and he's still very active in acting today.
Yes, I see him on television.
You
every
do?
Once in a while,
yes.
Too, yes.
Right. Now we'll have another, right?
That's When a Girl Marries. Am I right?
That's right. And who was the star?
Oh, no.
Oh.
Mary Jane Higby?
That's right. You're so right. Good for you. And Mary Jane has just recently written a book.
That's how I happen to know it, as a matter of fact.
It's very great. Yes.
I think she mentioned your name in the book.
She did?
Yes.
I got to run out and buy that book then.
You know, Rosa, as a matter of fact, your name has come up in many of our programs.
Every interview we have.
Yes, just about every interview we have. Yes.
Charles Harold mentioned you. Peg Lynch mentioned you.
Really? How lovely. They're all wonderful people. You know, there was a great strong family feeling in those days. Every show that you did, there was a strong bond of family feeling, and everyone was very near to each other. That is something to really regret today, because somehow with the other way things are going today, it isn't that strong bond.
Mm, mm.
Well, I'll give you another one.
All right.
And have you your handkerchief?
Thank you.
Lombardo show. I
know. Oh, no.
No. No,
you have to have a handkerchief for this one. Now you wouldn't cry with Guy Lombardo.
Well, I would. Sometimes when I hear him play, I want to cry.
Oh, that's just once a year.
What, Rosa, what show was that?
Between the Bookends with Ted Malone.
Oh, yes.
And Ted lives in Bronxville.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you should interview him sometime.
He's great.
You'd love him. And he used to pull tricks on me. Everything was ad lib. He would have a program or show, more or less, fixed, come in and decide to do something differently, you see, just to see what he could do to me. And so he was... He would pull out things that he knew that I didn't know what was coming to see what would happen. And the producers, directors, engineers, everybody in the control room would just be laughing like mad. Of course, there was a glass to keep from hearing them. But he pulled tricks on me, but everything was ad lib.
You think we should try that with you right now?
Why, thank you, Mr. Malone.
this is the way it was done.
Now, I don't know what you're going to do.
This is a poem called Slightly Swell.
All right.
Knowing you, darling, was slightly swell. A little of heaven, a little of hell. A parcel of paradise that wouldn't gel. Goodbye, you lug. It was slightly swell.
Great.
Okay.
Oh, that's great fun.
We're bringing back radio here for sure
tonight. Well, there was a very famous man, a Scotchman. See if you remember this one.
That we both have a blank expression on our faces.
I thought you were the authority on radio.
You got me on this one.
The gospel singer, Ed McHugh. My husband, Bill Yeoman, lived in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
That was his home. And he said every day when that time came, I forget whether it was 1:15 or 1:30, every day when that came on, his mother would say just before that, "Now, children, everybody be quiet. Don't bother me for the next 15 minutes. The gospel singer is on." And she'd go and sit down in her chair and listen to the gospel singer sing that 15 minutes. Now, he was great. He didn't have a cultured voice at all. In fact, he didn't know any music. And we had to be sure we gave him the starting note. And yet he had a lot of pathos to his voice. And he sang the hymns like songs, not as hymns. And everybody all over the country just adored him. They would come in the studio and almost want to touch his garment. That's how great they thought he was. And he went to everybody's home. The Scotchman came here. The Mr. Royal of NBC heard his mother, heard him singing a Boston station. And he was getting something like $15 a week. And Mr. Royal's mother said, "You want to bring this boy to NBC in New York." I listened to him every day. They did, and he ended up being one of the richest men here in Connecticut, in Westport. I have quite a number of beautiful dishes as well as many hymnals. He passed on, and he left me nearly a load of hymnals. I'm still giving out hymnals, but he was a great guy. Well, this is our one big one, the only show that was a complete drama every day. Oh, I almost told you. I mustn't tell you that. That's
no.
Your guessing.
That's my true story. Yes, that was
Well, it's really yours.
Yours.
Oh, man.
That was on quite late, as a matter of fact. I think that was on even in the late 50s.
Yes, it was. Our last show ended in 59.
59, uh-huh. Yes. And
yes.
They used to plug it quite a bit.
They had
the American Bandstand. That
That's
time,
right.
Too.
Yes. That went the longest. And we closed off about 1959. And then it was a decision to make whether we were going to stay in New York. And this had been sort of a Shangri-La out here anyhow. And I had my last programs at that time on Friday nights. The last one was Bill Stern. And that was really a very hard program to do. because Bill Stern didn't know any music, but he tried to tell me how to play, and it was very difficult. That was bad. I came out pretty tired.
Yeah, I remember this.
A Shangri-La here. And so then it was 1960 that my husband said, well, he said, you've had a very active life and a wonderful life. Why don't you teach? And I said, oh, no, not me. Now, this is very funny. When I was a little girl, I knew that I wanted to become a musician. And so they asked me what I wanted to do. And my folks spoke up readily and said, she'll be a music teacher. And I said, but I don't want to teach music. And they said, well, there's no other avenue for a girl but to teach. And I said, well, I'm not going to teach. And they said, why not? Because I said, I'm not going to teach other people's stupid children. I want to be on a stage, dress pretty, and hear their applause. Well, to make a long story short, it's very funny how things happen. No, it isn't funny, because I do believe in the divine law that governs our universe. And I guess the good Lord said, well, all right, I'll let you do what you want to do, but you're going to teach one of these days, young lady. And so I had all the wonderful experience of being in the many, many fields of music. And what did I do? Ended up teaching and loving it. You see? So I think good Lord has planned, well, I'll let you have all the experiences, be good for the children. And so I'm very active right here in Huntington, and which is a part of Shelton, naturally. But Huntington is a newer part of the growth here in Connecticut. And I am busy as I can be teaching both piano and organ to students. I have students that come from Hartford, too. So I have them as far as they come up from Long Island, from New York, New Jersey, all Connecticut, and up at Hartford. So you see, I'm doing just the thing that I thought I wasn't going to do, and I love it very much.
Well, would you do something for us? Would you play one of your showpieces, something you really enjoy playing, and let us hear what an organ really can sound like when we have somebody like your caliber playing it?
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll let you make the choice. Would you like something like on a clear day, you could see forever? Would you like raindrops?
Yeah, how about raindrops?
I'd take either one, Rosa.
You take either one?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
That was fabulous.
Delightful. And Rosa, I'd like to get back to another aspect of your career. You were associated, of course, with all of the top shows. We recognized the theme songs. But how about those days when you were stationed in a standby studio? What was that like?
Well, that was at times a little bit dreary. In case of a station break of any kind, I was supposed to watch the green light. Oftentimes, I was so sleepy, I would just lay my head on the piano and take a quick snooze and hope that the bell would wake me up. Otherwise, if I were not too tired, why, I used that time to practice. To practice piano and keep up your exercises, or to make arrangements on the organ, and those were the days where, union-wise, and you were on staff, they were entitled 8 hours. They got 8 hours,
mm-hmm.
And it was a little bit tough. I must tell you something very funny. Once upon a time, not me, but another organist and a man organist, wasn't thinking, and the light came on. And he jumped up on the organ and played "Somebody Else Is Taking My Place." Remember that old song?
Mm-hmm.
And it just happened that it was a dinner at the Waldorf where they were taking for one of the majors of the army, or general, one of the two. And someone else was really taking his place. And you never heard such repercussions we had over the thing. And the wire broke down, see? And this, and of all the things the man played, you see, somebody else to take my place. Well, we all got called in and really told about it. But as a carrier, I always try to play neutral things,
mm-hmm.
something that was entirely neutral. So if I didn't know what program was emanating from where or what, that I was safe.
Then you really didn't know what was on the network,
what might be breaking down
at the time.
No, it was best to play it neutral.
And perhaps some of our younger listeners don't understand what we're talking about. If there was a line failure, or if the program for some reason or other were cut off the air, a standby live organist would fill on the network.
That's right, because in other words, if that happens to the average person on their TV screen, it says standby, please. But you could say standby wouldn't mean anything on the air, because everybody got frantic if they didn't hear something. So we always all have the music. I happen to bring to mind the Breakfast Club. Well, there was a case of being on the spot and really knowing what to do and having to do it without any notice. I'm sure you do, Ed. Recall the time the Breakfast Club was supposed to come on the air, and it didn't, and all of a sudden we got a flash from California that Tom Brennan had passed away. They just found it, and we were ready to go. And you talk about a ride around the studio, and so immediately I happened to know that, and I went into going home, the New World Symphony of Dvorak, and while they were frantically getting everybody together and as many people to say and do the right thing, we filled in that hour, and was one of the most beautiful hours as a memoriam to him. And nothing was planned. We only had the news probably 5 or 10 minutes that they had phoned in. He was found dead.
You said the Breakfast Club. That was Breakfast in Hollywood, wasn't it?
Breakfast in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Tom Brennan.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. But that's how you had to know your business.
Yes, I guess you did. Rosa, were you aware that radio was on the wane, and at what point?
Well, I say we sort of began to get a little bit worried when the Hummett shows started to go off,
mm-hmm.
and weren't renewed. And I think that was the first telltale of the thing.
Yeah, then they all went off at once, didn't they? They canceled the whole series of them.
It started just one by one and off, and then they went, yes.
What was the last soap that you actually played on, do you recall?
When a Girl Marries.
When a Girl Marries.
And before that was Front Page Farrell, and before that was Lorenzo Jones.
And they went off in that order.
That's right. And My True Story stayed on, Ted Malone, Between the Bookends, things like that stayed on, because they were networked shows.
You ever do any syndicated work at all?
Oh, yes, quite a bit. Quite a bit.
Maybe you want to explain what that term means, Dick. It's sort of like the syndicated shows on television. They used to put it on records and then distribute
right.
it for
right.
local time slots.
That's
all over
right.
The country,
that was right? We did that, and it was in the Source department of NBC, called The Source.
The Source department?
Mm-hmm, The Source.
Do you have any of those still available, any of those recordings?
Well, we did quite a bit with name artists like Helen Hayes, a great number of stories we did for the Red Cross during the war and many things.
Speaking of the war, you did a show which was transmitted to the boys in service overseas.
Yes. That was called the Rosario Rhythms.
Now, you played on the piano, and Rosie, you're going to have to move over to the piano, I guess. I don't even think our engineer knows about this. we're going to pick it up right here. Now, did you ever speak on the show?
Yes, I did. And you want to know something? That was the hardest thing for me to do. They tried to write out scripts, and then they tried to coach me. And as long as I played the piano and organ, see, I had the piano to the right angle of me, and the organ was in front. Play the program, no problem. Talk, I just thought I would die. But I've learned to talk.
You certainly have. And you do very well at it, Rosa. Rosa, you're doing a number of concerts in addition to teaching, aren't you?
Yes, I just don't know what it is to relax, and I hope I never do. It keeps you young, active, and happy. The concerts today that I'm doing, strange enough, have jumped now from the plugged-in shows, which I used on radio, to real theater pipe organs. And that is really a dream. Once you've heard the sound of the real theater pipe organ, it is out of this world. Of course, you see, the perfect song of Amos and Andy was done on the real pipe organ from Hollywood.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yes, that was real pipe. Real pipe organ. And also One Man's Mystery, or what was that?
One Man's Family?
One Man's Family was done on real pipe organ. And so a few of them did emanate from there, and then one did from New York. So the pipe organ now has been restored by what we call organ buffs that have really donated their time, energy, and services to taking them out of the theater and restoring them. And I have been going around doing concerts on them. I recently, last month, was in Detroit, played on a four-manual whirlless organ, pipe organ. I was also in Cincinnati and played on a big pipe organ there. And I'm scheduled for already four concerts this spring. Two will be on what we call plug-ins, electric organs, and two will be on pipe organs.
That's an exciting and busy schedule for you.
It is, and you have to practice for it, you know. People, it's very funny. People come to hear me play, and they think, oh, wow, what an easy life you have. You know, it's so wonderful to be able to play like that. They just don't know how hard I work.
I'm sure they don't. Suppose we close our show tonight, Ed, with another familiar theme song that Rose is going to play, and one which she did play on the networks years ago. This would be a theme song to a show that was featured on the Golden Age about, I guess, last summer sometime.
Yes, Ethel and Albert with Peg Lynch and Alan Bunce, and this was the original theme before they went on to television even.
The program was written by Peg Lynch with music by Rosa Rio. Rosa, thank you so much for letting us share your story and your home here on the Golden Age of Radio tonight. We've enjoyed it immensely.
Well, I want to thank both of you gentlemen for the great interest that you have in this. I think this is a wonderful thing to bring back these wonderful memories, to refresh the many people that enjoyed it, and also bring its new ideas to those that were not so fortunate to hear it, to represent this wonderful golden age. I have enjoyed it, and of course, just looking at two handsome men all the time, I kind of like that too.
On that note, let's say goodnight. Ed, thank you very much for sharing your knowledge and your memories with us here on the Golden Age of Radio.
Thank you, Dick, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
The Golden Age of Radio is produced by Brian Hartnett. The engineer is Bob Schirego. This is Dick Bertel. Good night.
Camel Cigarettes present Benny Goodman's Swing School, the Tuesday evening rally of everybody everywhere who gets a lift.